Well, good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO FM in Juneau, Alaska. This is Juneau Afternoon. I'm Pat Moore. I'll be hosting the show today. Linda Buckley will join us very shortly here with an excerpt from a program which is going to air on channel on KTOO on Monday at 7 called the Mud Ruins program. We'll hear that. The Juneau Shotokan Karate Do Club will come by. We'll have a preview of tonight's fireside lecture at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center, and we'll talk with Kevin O'Malley about tomorrow's Tracks, Fields, and Signs Audubon outing. The weather is cold and windy, cloudy, very windy, chance of snow, highs 18 to 24, and northeast winds 15 to 35 with gusts to 75 miles per hour, so button up.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Many tribal leaders are praising President Obama's rejection of a proposed pipeline to bring oil from Canadian tar sands to the United States. But as Matt Laszlo reports, partisan politics derailed the plan, which means the debate is far from over.
Native leaders in Canada and the U.S. were vocal opponents of the Trans-Canada XL pipeline because they feared it would contaminate more water on tribal lands. They won for now, because the president says Republicans only gave his administration 60 days to approve a new route for the plan, which still hasn't had a proper environmental review. His spokesperson, Jay Carney, says the GOP is to blame for attaching the Keystone Project to a tax bill.
In a purely partisan effort to score a political point, Republicans in Congress insisted on inserting an extraneous provision within a bill that had nothing to do with pipelines.
But Republicans are up in arms over the announcement. House Speaker John Boehner is accusing the president of selling out American jobs in order to appease his liberal base.
The president was given the authority to block this project only and only if he believes it's not in the national interest of the United States. Is it not in the national interest to create tens of thousands of jobs here in America with private investment?
The GOP has made Keystone a centerpiece of their attacks on the president, which analysts say means Native leaders' fight to block the project is now just entering a new phase. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Now we turn to Canada, where a Native leader in Alberta says the rejection of the project by Obama is a victory. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, his people have already been impacted by development.
Alan Adam is the chief of the Athabasca Chipewyan First Nation. He says the administration of President Barack Obama made the right decision, and that move puts the Alberta oil sands on notice that regulatory rules matter. Adam also says it's important that the industry also understands that processes must be followed and development cannot proceed recklessly.
We will continue to oppose any new projects in the area until we get all our questions answered in a proper way. And it's not saying that we're against development. We just want to make sure that development occurs in a sustainable way. And at this point in time, there is no sustainable process in place for the development. It's just take as much as we can and walk away with the environmental, disaster after the fact.
Adam says his community has already been hurt by the oil sands. It's faced with higher rates of cancer, some of them rare forms usually unheard of in small communities. Adam says the government needs to look at this information and act on it, and that includes tougher regulations. Environmental activists oppose the development of the oil sands, saying the extraction process makes it the dirtiest oil in the world. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The director of the White House Initiative on American Indian and Alaska Native Education, William Mendoza, and other federal officials are meeting with tribal leaders in Rapid City, South Dakota today. They're looking at expanding Indian educational opportunities. The Washington Indian Gaming Association says a new economic impact study shows Washington's 29 tribal governments are making a significant and growing impact to the state and tribes. Highlights from gaming in 2010 showed more than 27,000 jobs, more than $250 million generated in state and local taxes, and more than $3 billion added to the state economy. The findings were released to the legislature this week. During this week in 2008, the last traditional speaker of the Eyak language died, Honorary Chief Marie Smith Jones. A website was launched last year to help Eyak people of Cordova, Alaska learn the language. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC, CLIC, GIVE when filing online for your PFD. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Support for National Native News comes from the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 5 minutes after three. Pat Moore, your host. Well, it's 6 minutes after three. Pat Moore, your host for Juneau Afternoon. A couple of weather-related announcements. First of all, the weather forecast is for definitely winter conditions. We're looking at 75-mile-per-hour gusts near downtown Juneau and Douglas for the next through tonight. There's a high wind warning. It goes off at 5 a.m. tomorrow morning. So batten down the hatches and tie the roof to the house for the rest of today. And Saturday, we're looking at locally windy with snow and a snow accumulation starting this evening of 2 to 4 inches tonight, 3 to 6 inches tomorrow, with the highs over the weekend running about what they are now, between 17, 23 degrees. And those north winds will drop down to only 50 miles per hour on Saturday and then 45 and back down to 20 on Sunday. So the high wind condition will continue through most of Saturday and probably into Sunday a little bit. That has caused a cancellation or two around town, mainly because flights from Seattle to Juneau have been canceled due to the huge storm from Seattle standards that has caused Alaska Airlines to cancel a bunch of flights. So the first one of these is the cancellation of tonight's Sound and Motion presentation up at the University of Alaska. Jim Darling was scheduled to talk on Whale Song, and he is unable to arrive in Juneau. His flight was backed up due to the winter storm. And so Jim Darling was going to present research on humpback whale songs, including structure, composition, similarities. We hope that we can host Dr. Darling for a presentation at a future date, says UAS Chancellor John Pugh. And another change that's come about due to the high winds in the Juneau area, the teams for the upcoming hockey games haven't been able to make it into Juneau. So the West Valley hockey team is unable to make it to Juneau in time for today's JV game. It was scheduled at 2:15, so it was going to be going on right now. And the varsity game scheduled tonight for 8 o'clock p.m. is also canceled. So we're hoping that the games will be able to proceed as scheduled tomorrow. Again, that depends on flights getting in, so stay tuned. And perhaps keep an eye on those events if you're thinking of taking part in them. The first part of today's program is a kind of a preview. Coming up on Monday night at 7 p.m., KTOO will be airing a program that's gone on a couple of times now, which is a live storytelling program called Mudrooms. And so we're going to hear an excerpt from Mudrooms here that was recorded on the 11th. So here we go.
The following stories were recorded on January 11th, 2012, at the second event of Mudrooms, performed at McPheeters Hall. Mudrooms is a monthly event featuring real people telling real stories. Our next speaker is Linda Buckley. Linda is an aspiring author, the mother of three and grandmother of five. She's lived in Alaska long enough to be considered a pioneer. She skied Eagle Crest from day one, and she has a small yoga studio in Penike Hot Springs, 60 miles from Juneau, where she can escape the urban rat race of the capital city during the summer months. Linda loves to sing, and she's performed at the Alaska Folk Festival with various groups, including the Buckley Woman. Linda loves to travel, especially to Southeast Asia, where she has many friends and favorite beaches. In fact, she writes, "What the heck am I doing in Juneau in January?" So if I'm here, might as well tell some stories.
Tom, what a perfect lead-in. I was going to say one of the things that's really outdated is the stuff in the fridge. And they have that use-by date, which I never paid any attention to either. But I went to a friend's house in Hawaii, actually. It was a male friend who was serving me baked potato, and he said, would you like sour cream on the baked potato? And I said, sure. And I bit into this and started chewing. I mean, it was nasty. It didn't have green on it, so I thought there's no mold. But I thought, I have got to go over to the counter and see what the expiration date. This was last summer, or May. The expiration date was June 2006. Oh, I mean, the scary thing is, what kind of chemical? I mean, it wasn't even sour cream. There was no dairy, I'm sure, in that. But anyway, I'm not going to talk about stuff in the refrigerator, though. I'm going to talk about basically the death of the telephone. I grew up in a telephone family. My parents worked for the Pacific Northwest Bell Phone Company in Seattle. And in the 50s, well, in the 40s, my mother was a switchboard operator and derailed her from going to college because of the war. But in the 50s, I think she had like a natural instinct for teaching and, you know, it's sort of the family thing. And she did a presentation on telephone etiquette in all of the businesses around Seattle and schools. And she would do these caricatures. She'd draw them first, you know, kind of sketch them, and then she'd, you know, draw them, and one was Mr. Mumbles, and one was Mr. Kurt. You know, this is how not to talk on the phone. So I called my brother, David, who lives in Arizona, and I said, I can't remember all of Mother's, you know, caricatures. You know, do you remember them? And he goes, all I remember about the 50s was you got a blue princess telephone, and I got moved to the basement because Grandma took over my room, and they slipped food and beverages under the door, and I had no windows. He's still bitter. I mean, this is a long time ago. And so he hung up, and then about 2 days later, he emailed me, you know, Mr. Yak and Mr. whatever. And then he said in the 50s, they didn't have any Mrs. anybody. You know, it was all male characters. And I thought, you know, telephone etiquette. You remember you say, this is the Miller residence. You know, there was an etiquette. Now you get a text that says, yo, Funk, what's your scene? You know, or I mean, it's like not even, or they don't even say a greeting. It's just some kind of, you know, letters, like you say. I mean, there's no punctuation. And then those faces, and are they happy? I thought LOL meant lots of love. It meant laugh out loud. Who knew? I didn't know that. So, okay, we go from the 50s, telephone etiquette, jump ahead to the 80s, the invention of the answer machine. I mean, this is outdated. You know, now there's a few of you that might still have it because Juno, you know, behind. But there, most people have voicemail. But I remember we got the message machine, and it was like this new game. You know, oh, boy, let's try it with a Japanese accent. Or, you know, or let's have our, you know, four-year-old answer it and say that, you know, this, you've reached the Sunset Show, and you can leave a message for, you know, our cat, our dog, our guinea pig, beep. And it went on and on. And, you know, you just get more creative, and people would quote Gandhi for, you know. And I have to admit, I mean, I was definitely dug it, and I'm sure I upset my friends with lots of creative messages. So in the summer of 88, I went to Vermont to graduate school. I had to go there for like a month seminar, and I thought, okay, the kids are 17 and 18. All of you that have children younger than that or whatever, let this be a lesson. They're not old enough to leave alone. And I was in a class with a bunch of people that were that age, and they went, you left alone for a month? I mean, your house, they're going to have parties. It's just going to be one giant drunk. And I went, no. They're very well raised there, and they would never do that. So I called, and on the message machine, in a voice that sounded like Clint Eastwood, I mean, really, and exactly Clint, I'm out back cleaning my gun. The hot tub's hot. The beer's cold. My mom's out of the country. Come on over. And I said, Jimmy, pick up the phone. I mean, I was just stunned, you know, and he picked up the phone. He was screening the calls, you know, even back then. And I went, what? You changed that message right now. Have you had parties? No. My sister's having all the parties. No, I've been really good and everything. And so then they get on the extension and tell me who's bad. And I said, all right, I am calling the neighbors, and they're going to do drive-bys. If there is any car in that driveway other than mine, JPD is coming. He said, you turn us in? I said, yes, I would turn you in to the police. not, you're 18, you'd go to jail, you know. Okay, that's the 80s. Okay, now we go, we skip again 20 more years. Skype. Oh, horrible. This same 18-year-old now lives in Germany with his kids, and they want to Skype me. And I was like, oh, this will be cool. I remember in the 50s, they were saying, oh, yeah, one day you'll see who you're talking to. Well, what if you're, you know, your hair is a mess and you're, yeah. I didn't think it would be good. And I thought you'd have a telephone with a little television in it. I didn't, you know, we couldn't conceive of a computer on it. So we get the Skype. Of course, it's morning here. It's night there. A 2- and a 4-year-old. And he goes, Mom, look at this. We just went to Frankfurt. He's showing me pictures of Frankfurt. Isn't this so cool? And on his lap is the 2-year-old who is taking a loaf of bread and tearing it apart. He's just throwing, you know, and Jimmy's clueless. He's just so excited to show me, friend. And the bread is like literally, he's hucking it, he's throwing it, he's chewing it, he's spitting it out. He's having a great time. I hear the mom in the other room. Are you watching him? What is, and she comes in and there's all this bread everywhere. And she said, you're supposed to be watching him. Of course, I'm watching the show. It's like bad reality TV. I want to change the channel. It's like, oh my God. And so then, you know, he says, I'll clean it up later. No, you won't. Then the vacuum cleaner. This is, I'm watching, you know. I watch 5 minutes of her vacuuming and I just think, this is, I mean, and it's morning. I haven't even had coffee yet. It's like bad. The next thing that happens, you think it can't get worse, is the 4-year-old jumps out of the bathtub, comes in and waves his winky at Grandma. Hi, Grandma! You know, like full on, full Monty, you know. And I went, you know what? My poor mother and telephone etiquette. I thought if we could just, you know, she died 2 years ago, so, you know, she's probably getting the whole show. But it was like, Skype. Okay, so the last thing I want to say is that now I'm even outdated on my phone. You know, I have the old kind of like this flip. And I was talking to Steve Nelson, and he said he went to a concert. And in the old days, you go to a concert, and it'd be a really nice, slow song, and everybody bring their Bic lighter. You ever been to one of those? No, now, Everybody holds up their iPhone, and they all have the flashlight app. If you can you imagine, and everybody's, you know, it just loses something somehow. So anyway, the death of the telephone, thank you very much.
Mudrooms is a community-powered event created by Amanda Compton and Alita Bass. If you'd like to tell your story, send us an email at mudrooms.juno@gmail.com. Audio production was conducted by Mark Wheeler.
Mudrooms will air on KTOO on Monday at 7 p.m., so take a listen if that little intriguing section of stories by real people got your attention. My guests in the studio right now are members all of the Shotokan Karate Club here in Juneau. Shotokan is a form of martial art that stems from Japan. So with me are Doug Murray and Kathy Hawker and Stacy Poulsen, and all three black belts, I think, right? I think
mm-hmm.
so.
Yes.
Okay. And I've been studying karate for some years, if that's the case, I should imagine. Doug, how long have you been?
Going on 30 years, probably.
30 years. My, my. So you started when you were about six.
Mid-20s. Yeah.
Mid-20s? Oh, okay. Okay. Kathy, I won't make a comment about age, but when how long have you studied?
I started in, I believe, 2001.
2001. And Stacy?
I'm pretty close to the same time.
Oh, so the two of you are of a class then.
Mm-hmm.
Have you gone through the Shotokan Dojo since you began? Is this where you started?
No, I started actually in college, so many years ago, but as a Taekwondo student.
And then switched.
Mm-hmm. I switched a couple times. I've done Shukukai and Shotokan.
Gee, all of these names. There must be a million different kinds of martial arts. I don't, not maybe, I'm not a million, but several hundred. Are there like some main strains of martial arts?
Yeah, I'd say that there's Japanese karate and Korean karate are probably the main streams, but there's also Chinese.
Yeah. Kung Fu, mm-hmm. I think, yeah. Okay. So the dojo here has been in existence, I think, for about as long as you've been in karate. Is
that, just about 30 years, that's correct, yeah.
Yeah, and who runs the dojo? Who's in charge of it?
Diana Stevens is our senior instructor.
Yeah. Okay.
And chief instructor.
She's referred to as the sensei of the dojo?
That's correct.
What does that mean?
Teacher.
Teacher. Basically. Oh, okay.
Plain
okay.
and simple.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and this particular martial art is, what does it stress? What's the center of Shotokan karate? Anybody?
It's a traditional Japanese style that emphasizes self-defense and a perfection of character. And it's, by the time folks get to black belt, they realize that it's a pretty much a lifelong endeavor.
How are there are young students, I think, at the dojo, right?
Yeah.
Seven up. Is the class different for them? I mean, you don't expect them to do the things that adults do.
No, we have a children's class every day. Tuesdays and Thursdays, it starts at 6:45. And when you're first starting at the dojo, we actually take you at 6 o'clock, sorry, for the kids' class, 6:45 for the adults. We actually take you aside and show you how to bow in and all the basics. You know, blocking, punching, kicking, before you actually join the full class.
And I'd say it's kind of interesting to watch kids join the class. A lot of times we all go through the same process. Everybody, regardless of age, really goes through learning the same things. And we've often had kids join with their parents. And that's a lot of fun for the family to be learning together and working together toward that.
Do they attend the same class?
They often do, yeah, especially the kids. The parents will go ahead and join in on the kids' class. We have several families that have done that, and then they eventually move up to the more advanced class.
Is there an age beyond which someone might not be able to either start karate or continue karate?
No, not really, actually. Karate is really kind of your own individual practice in that sense. So we haven't had anybody start, I think, that was maybe over 70, but I would still think that's possible.
And that's one of the nice things about this dojo, too, is that we have a pretty relaxed atmosphere. I mean, there's definitely the structure in it, but people come here for exercise, and it's really family-oriented. We have picnics during the summer and other events that we go to, and it's really a lifestyle. You incorporate it into your life.
Is this dojo related to any other dojo? I guess is the name of the that's what this is called, right? Mm-hmm. Does that have a meaning?
It's a training place.
A training, mm-hmm. The Japanese word.
Yeah.
Okay. So is this dojo related to other dojos anywhere else?
Yeah, we're actually a family of the Alaska Shotokan, a karate organization, and there's 10 clubs throughout Alaska.
Where are they?
Well, there's about half of them are in Anchorage. But we also have clubs in Gamble, Homer, Palmer, Fairbanks, Wasilla, and Bethel.
Now, while we're talking about affiliations, I also heard that there's some relationship between 4-H and this karate dojo. Is that right? Mm-hmm. How's that work?
Yeah, the youth members of our dojo are also members of 4-H. So there's a pretty close relationship there.
So do they gain credit toward 4-H awards or anything?
Their work is.
Yeah, that's correct. They're 4-H members, and so they're, they can do.
So this is a 4-H activity?
That's correct,
Like farming or agricultural projects?
And I believe we've been a member of 4-H for over 20 years.
Huh.
Yeah, they receive pins for each year that they attend, and we also take part in the tree sale in the spring. Other 4-H activities.
So, and then is there a national organization as well?
Yeah, it's called the International Shotokan Karate Federation.
Yeah,
and it's actually in 61 countries now. It's expanding pretty rapidly. It basically broke away from the home organization in Japan about 4 or 5 years ago, and it's been expanding quite significantly every year.
So if you started this particular type of karate, the chances are that you could find some place if you moved to another location or something like that?
Yes,
say
that's correct.
High school student or something mm-hmm. like that might be able to continue training in the same discipline at college.
Yep, yeah, there's a pretty good chance of that, you bet.
Mm-hmm. I'd say also one of the really neat things to me about this being an international organization is that we have our Juno family of the dojo, which is a really wonderful supportive group, but also it's really neat to me to know that I could travel abroad and go to a dojo with permission, of course, and watch and listen to people doing the same things that I do here and have that connection with people in a whole different world. I really like that about it.
And the commands are in Japanese, so you'd understand what you were being asked to do, even if it was in Denmark. So can you describe a typical class, a training session? What happens? What would someone do if they were new to the dojo and going through this assistance thing that Stacy was telling us about?
Our classes kind of change according to the whim of the instructor. But usually we start with our warm-ups, and then we do basics. Then we'll either do a kata or some other kind of a combination. And then we'll do some kumite or some application of our kata, which is called bunkai.
All these words. So what are basics?
Basics are just getting into the right stances and learning how to kick and hit properly, punch properly.
And block.
And block.
And then you use the term kata. What's a kata?
A kata is a set number of movements, essentially self-defense against multiple opponents. And it's a for each ranking, there's a new kata that the karateka needs to learn. And it's the same number of movements and techniques for each kata. And as you get up in ranking, they get a little bit more complicated.
A karateka is a person who studies karate.
Correct.
Oh, okay. We're having a mini course in Japanese in the interview, I think. So then you mentioned that you might do kumite.
Kumite?
Kumite.
It's sparring. And when you're first starting out in sparring, we do a very formalized set of sparring, which is three-step or five-step. So you're basically walking forward three times doing a punch or at different levels. And the person that's walking backwards is defending themselves against that. It's a set style. The higher you rank, the more complicated the kumite becomes. So by the time you're a brown belt, you're doing an ippon kumite, which is where you step to the side, but you can do any attack or any defense that you want. The attack will stay the same. You have to actually announce your attack. And then by the time you're a black belt, it's pretty much free sparring. So we work you up depending on your level.
So beginners would not be expected to go out on the floor and engage in some kind of karate fight.
No, not at all. And that's one of the reasons this dojo has a wide range of ages in the dojo, because there's very few accidents, there's very few injuries in our dojo because of that. We really work towards your level of expertise.
Am I right, you guys built the dojo floor? Is that?
That's correct, yes.
There's tires underneath there, right?
That's correct. Yeah. When we started out in
where do you meet? Where is the dojo?
9447 La Perouse, mm-hmm. which is back there by the Valley Wastewater Treatment Plant. And we have one side of a green warehouse out there, and mm-hmm. it's pretty easy to find because we have a big emblem on the outside. But when we started the club, we shared it with the Glacier Valley Judo Club, and because they needed a little bit of a flexible floor, we got together and we found about I think it was about 360 some odd tires that all had the same width. And laid them out on the floor and put some 2x4s out there and cover that with plywood. And so we have a nice, you know, kind of a floor that gives a bit. It's not your traditional karate floor. And soon after that, the judo club went elsewhere. But we still have the floor.
And is it unusual? I mean, if you go somewhere else and practice, as you were saying, if you went to another dojo somewhere else, would the floor feel strange to you?
I've done that and been to other dojos and had the floor, get used to it. Actually, but often when we go, say, to camp, we end up training on concrete, or we might train on grass or we might train on a wood floor. It's all about being flexible and being able to apply what you've learned to other situations. It's pretty fun.
Camp,
yes. Our Alaska Region organization has a camp every summer for all ages. Well, let's see, I think it's, is all ages, and it's up in outside of Anchorage at Birchwood Camp. Wonderful, a lot of fun. In August, we have excellent instructors who come in to teach, and it's just a really inspiring time for everybody who goes.
Is there a charge for taking karate classes?
There are monthly dues, and then there's an annual fee.
Okay, and approximately what?
I think the youth is about $42 a month, and then the adults are 50-some-odd, yeah.
And then do you have to buy gear as well? Is there equipment?
You don't have to right away, and in fact, we encourage you not to. Eventually, people will want to buy a karate uniform, it's called a gi.
Yeah.
I could also point out that if you have multiple family members who are attending, there's actually a discount for additional family members after the first.
At the Shotokan Dojo.
At our dojo, Shotokan in Juneau.
Okay. And then if someone were interested in doing this, I think there's going to be a table at the mall over the weekend. Is that right,
Stacey? Yeah, it's going to be there from 11 until 3 tomorrow, Saturday.
Okay, and then you're on later in the month, I think, too?
And February 11th,
We'll
have the table set up again.
Okay, so if people want to sign up, they can actually sign up and talk to someone about the Shotokan Dojo at that table.
Yeah, we'll have a demonstration video going on, and we'll have forms for registration and actually a coupon.
And so if they don't make that, how else could they find out if someone wants to sign up to take karate? How would they do that?
Well, you can find us on the web. I believe it's still junoshotokan.org. Mm-hmm. But the phone number is 790-4199. And just leave a message.
790-4199. Leave a message if necessary.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Juno Shotokan Karate Dojo. And how many people are involved at the moment? How big is the dojo?
Well, currently, I think we have about 50 to 60.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Active members.
In any one class, we may have fewer than that, depending on who shows up that day. But
yeah, a typical adult class or higher-ranking class, which is the same one, they're somewhere between 20 and say, 30 people in there.
Okay, and how many kids would be at a kid's class?
Youth class is maybe, say, 12 to 18.
12 to 18, okay. So thank you very much. It sounds like an exciting opportunity to engage in a martial art here in Juneau and learn the skills and like that.
It's a great group of people.
Yeah.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, thanks for coming down and talking about that.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 20th of January, 2012. It's the anniversary of the first roller coaster, the Coney Island Roller Coaster, opened on this date, 1885. LaMarcus Thompson had the patent on it. It was called the Gravity Switchback Railway. Cost a nickel to ride, and it drew huge crowds. It's the birthday of Robert Olin Butler, born Granite City, Illinois, 1945, theater major, worked as a cab driver, worked in a steel mill, taught high school, enlisted in the Army during the Vietnam War. He was assigned to Army Intelligence, spent a year learning Vietnamese, living in an old French hotel in Saigon. Returned to this country in 1972, worked as a reporter, editor in New York, wrote his first novels on a legal pad, traveling to and from work on the Long Island Railroad. His first novel, The Alleys of Eden, came out in 1981, the first book in what would become a Vietnam trilogy. In the fall of 2001, he produced a webcast about his writing process, following the journey of a short story from idea to final polish, in real time narrating his thought process as he went along, answering emails from viewers. The series was called Inside Creative Writing, ran for 17 episodes, 2 hours each, still available for download. His most recent work, Robert Olin Butler, a short story collection, Ouija Stories, and a novel, A Small Hotel, published last year. It's the birthday of the novelist Susan Vreeland, born Racine, Wisconsin, 1946, taught high school English in San Diego for 30 years. She'd done a little writing, but didn't really embark on a writing career until after she was diagnosed with lymphoma in 1996. Went through chemotherapy, operations during her recovery, couldn't do much but look at books. She found the paintings of Vermeer very soothing, so she decided to write a book about him. Vermeer only turned out 30-some paintings, so she began with the premise that he had painted one more, called Girl in Hyacinth Blue, and she wrote a novel about the painting and people who had owned it over the years, which became a bestseller in 1999. Her most recent novel, Clara and Mr. Tiffany. And it's the birthday of the comedian and talk show host Bill Maher, born New York City, 1956. Father was a news editor for NBC, graduated from Cornell, degree in English and history, started working in comedy clubs, did stand-up on The Tonight Show, and in 1993, the fledgling cable network Comedy Central approached him to host a show, Politically Incorrect. Now he has a show on HBO called Real Time with Bill Maher. Bill Maher, who said, "We're always waving the big foam number one finger, but we're not number one in most things. We're not number one in literacy, money spent on education. We're not even number one in social mobility." Social mobility means basically the American dream, the ability of one generation to do better than the next. We're 10th. That's like Sweden coming 10th in Swedish meatballs. Here's a poem for today by Hal Sirovitz, Red, Red Bra. "I bought a red bra," she said. "I knew you'd like it. The only problem was I didn't have a red blouse to wear with it. I bought that and red pants and shoes so it wouldn't stand out so much. I also thought of getting red panties, but I said to hell with that. I'm not going to worry if one small part of the outfit doesn't match. And who's going to see my underwear? Just you. What do you know about fashion? Nothing." Red Red Bra, a poem by Hal Sirovitz from his collection Before, During, and After, published by Soft Skull Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. iPad users can download the three most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012, at poetryfoundation.org. Written by Holly Vanderhaar, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 23 minutes to 22 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News. We have a high wind warning for Juneau until 5 a.m. tomorrow morning. The rest of today should be cloudy, very windy, chance of snow, highs 18 to 25 degrees. Northeast winds 15 to 35 miles an hour. Wind gusts are expected to go up to 75 miles an hour. Strongest wind gusts near downtown Juneau and Douglas. So the Takus are with us. Batten down the hatches, tie the roof to the house, and do all the other stuff that's necessary in order to sustain high winds without horrible damage. My next guest is Harry Tullis, and Harry is the lead wilderness ranger for the Admiralty National Monument, and I was surprised to find that Admiralty is a national monument. How's that come about, Harry?
Admiralty was actually created by President Carter back in 1978. He used his authority as president as an executive order under the Antiquities Act to create it as a national monument, which during most of the 70s, some old Junoites may remember, there was a very political back and forth to try and get Admiralty available for logging, large-term, long-term logging contracts, and many people, Juneau and Angoon, were lobbying against it, and President Carter stepped in and said, "Well, I'm just going to make it a national monument," and it was, of course, during the D2 talks and everything, and it ended up a couple of years later, ANILCA was passed, and And then the majority of the island was designated as a wilderness area as well, and it's now the Kutznuwu Wilderness. So it has that dual designation.
So when you visit Admiralty, you don't have to – it's not like entering a national monument that you drive into in the lower 48 and you have to go to a visitor's center.
No. A lot of people associate national monuments as part of the National Park Service, but national monuments can be other under other agencies as well, including the Forest Service, and there are two of them here in southeast Alaska. Misty Fjords is also another national monument wilderness area. So it's – you know, there has to be something special about the place for it to be designated and classified as a national monument. And the resource of the unique bear population was one of the primary factors that was able to have it designated. So
yeah. Because of the type of bear or the numbers or what's
The bear, it was considered as one of the densest bear populations, one of the last strongholds of bears in North America. You know, there's more bears on Admiralty Island than there are in the lower 48 put together. So
Do you spend time on Admiralty as part of your job?
Oh yeah. You know, during the summer we have our summer field programs out there, and I'm the crew supervisor, so I spend a lot of time in Juneau in front of my desk staring at a computer quite a bit. But, you know, we have a staff out in the field. All the Forest Service programs are typically in the field doing a lot of great work from mid-May till mid-September, you know. So,
Do we have tourists who visit Admiralty because it's a national monument?
Oh, yeah. Most
what kind of numbers?
The numbers vary depending on the types of uses they're doing and where they're going. There are several cabins on Admiralty, just like the cabins on the Juneau Road system here that people can rent and go to. But certainly one of the biggest draws is the Pack Creek Wildlife Viewing Area, which is primarily for bear viewing. And we limit the number what we call the peak season, to just 24 people a day. And if we didn't limit that, we'd probably have much greater numbers. But we limit it for a couple of different reasons. Number one, to protect the resource of the habituated bears. I mean, if you have too many people, then you end up maybe not having as many bears. And then the other reason is because we want to make sure that the visitor's experience is in line with what they expect to, as far as being in wilderness. You know, when you enter a wilderness, you don't expect to be surrounded by throngs of other people. So we limit the numbers during the summer. But we also have a shoulder season where there is no limit, but the bear activity isn't quite as much. But we have up to 1,200 people a summer come to Pack Creek. So,
this 1,200 people who come to Pack Creek, is that all tourist traffic, or are those people who are there for other purposes? Or
They're all tourists. We divide the use kind of 50-50 between the general public who can get their permits. What has traditionally been through the district office, but I have another announcement this year. We're actually changing the way people are going to be able to get their permits, which will be through a website, the national reservation system called recreation.gov.
Oh, same place that you go for reserving.
For cabins.
Yeah, okay.
Right, the same place. And so that's going to be happening starting February 1st. And so we're going to be talking about that next Tuesday night out at the visitor center as well, and we need to make sure that Juneau residents are kind of up to speed on how that's going to occur and what they need to do and the process and any changes that we've implemented, like in the cancellation and refund policy. All those things I'll explain in great detail.
But in between now and then, you have another presentation coming up.
Yes.
at the visitor center, right?
Tonight is the fireside chat. Many Juneau people are familiar with that, and hopefully they can come out tonight. I know we have some pretty extreme weather that's supposed to be happening, and folks may not, you know, be able to get out. You know, I my wife was going to attend, but she's flying down from Anchorage, and she called me on the phone a few minutes ago.
She's not flying down from Anchorage.
I might be going to Seattle on the way, you know. Yeah. But yeah, hopefully people can come out. And the subject tonight is we had a couple of – actually, we had three student interns out at Pat Creek this summer. And one of them is actually in college right now. She's back east going to school, so she won't be able to participate. But the other two students are local high school students. One goes to JDHS and the other one goes to Thunder Mountain, and they're both going to be they spent 10 days out at Pat Creek, one in June and one in July, and they're going to share some photos and I think actually a couple of little video clips of the time they were there. And essentially, they job shadowed the staff that works out there, and you know, the staff got to mentor them. You know, the Forest Service has a lot of different programs to get youth out into the woods and start enjoying and appreciating nature. And of course, most of those programs are geared toward younger children, but this internship program is to start to get older kids thinking about a career path, and if they want to get into a job where they have, you know, a connection with the land, and whether it's one of the hard sciences, you know, or the kind of the field I work in is recreation and wilderness management, you know. So we just want to let them know that those doors are open. They just have to pursue them. And so we had this internship program that got them out there for 10 days, and they were able to work right alongside my crew, and they had a great time, and they just want to come tonight and share their stories.
So that program begins what time this evening?
The Fireside Chats are, there's two of them per night. There's one at 6:30 and then one at 8 o'clock.
Same program?
Same program.
Just repeated.
They always do two of them, typically, and it's, again, at the Glacier Visitor Center.
And those programs are free. Yeah.
Yep, they're free.
Okay,
yep.
Good. So high school interns who served at Pat Creek on the Admiralty National Monument.
Right.
And will you be there as well?
I will be there.
And
yep.
So the lead wilderness ranger of the Admiralty National Monument will be present to wax philosophical about the subject of Pat Creek and its its offerings and wonders.
Yep.
Well, thank you very much for telling us about this.
And program. I have one other announcement.
Okay. Announce away.
In 2008, we had a film crew from PBS come out and spend the entire summer filming Pat Creek Bears, as well as down in Windfall Harbor and mostly on Admiralty. And I think he actually got a little bit of footage over on Chichagof. But PBS and I think the BBC or whatever had put together as part of the Nature series, and it's going to be showing on K2 next week on Wednesday the 25th.
Wednesday, what time?
Well, the word I got was 8 o'clock Eastern time, which is 4 o'clock Alaska time. And so I can't verify that. You know, that's the word I got was it was 8 o'clock Wednesday, 8 o'clock p.m. Wednesday.
Well, we'll try to find out when it is.
It's called Fortress of the Bears, and it's part of the Nature series. And so there's going to be a lot of great Pat Creek footage there as well.
Okay. Wonderful.
And again, come tonight to watch the kids, and then next Tuesday, the 24th, at 7 p.m. at the Glacier, and I'll talk about the new permitting system.
Okay. Well, thank you extremely for coming down, Harry, and telling us all these things.
All right. Thank you.
I went to his room in the middle of the night. I tiptoed inside and I turned on the light. But to my dismay, he was nowhere in sight. And I'm sure Uncle Walter went waltzing that night. He goes, wah, 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 wah. Walter won't do, so he can go waltzing, wah, wah, wah. Mom bought Uncle Walter a new suit to wear, but when he comes in, it's all covered with hair. And lately I've noticed there's several new tears, and I'm sure Uncle Walter's been walking with Bear. He goes wah 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 wah, waltzing with bears. Raggy Bear, Shaggy Bear, Saggy Bear too, and there's nothing on earth Uncle Walter won't do. Told Uncle Walter that he should be good and do all the things that I said that he should, but I know that he'd rather be off in the woods, and I'm afraid that I'll lose him for good. He goes wah 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 wah, waltzing with bears, Raggy Bear, Shaggy Bear, Saggy Bear too, and there's nothing on earth Uncle Walter won't do. So he can go waltzing, wah, wah, waltzing. He can go waltzing with bears. I begged and I pleaded with Uncle Walter to stay, and I managed to keep him inside for a day. But the bears all barged in, and they took him away. Now he's dancing with pandas, and I can't understand it, but the bears all demand at least one waltz a day. But last night when the moon rose, we crept down the stairs. He took me to dance where the bears have their lair. We danced in a bear hug with nary a care. Walter won't do. So he can go waltzing, wah, 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 waltzing. He can go waltzing with bears.
Specialty, foreign affairs or digital photography, free skiing, purebred cats. The Juno Public Library subscribes to over 300 magazines for kids and adults, and you can check out back issues for 4 weeks, the same as books. Explore a new hobby or catch up with a favorite publication. Take your time, because you can take it home for a month. Go to juno.org/library.
The University of Alaska Southeast is sorry to announce the cancellation of tonight's presentation by researcher Jim Darling on whale songs. Unfortunately, Mr. Darling is unable to arrive in Juneau due to backed-up flights after Thursday's winter storm. Those canceled flights throughout the Northwest. Dr. Darling was to present his research into humpback whale songs, including their structure, composition, similarities, and differences across the North Pacific, and what it all might mean. According to UAS Chancellor John Pugh, they look forward to hosting Dr. Darling for a presentation at a future date. And related also, the high winds in the Juneau area have caused the Anchorage flights to be canceled, so the West Valley hockey team will not be able to make it down here for tonight's 8 o'clock varsity game. The the JV game was also canceled as well. So if you were planning on going to the hockey game tonight, it's been canceled.
Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are making our communities better places to live. They give their time, their hearts and minds, their passion, their creativity. Now, hear their stories.
Hi, we're the East Side Solar Club.
So basically what's going on, we have
Anchorage's Minju Kim is giving a tour of one of two solar suitcases she and other East High School Solar Club students recently completed. Over the course of two school years, this team of about 20 students built these units from scratch. Each is contained in a rugged black case and is a portable device that can be used to power lights, equipment, or computers, or to charge batteries. Soon, members of the Alaska Sudan Medical Project will bring the solar suitcases with them to Africa, where they'll be put to good use. Here's Russell Hood. He's the Solar Club's advisor and a science and physics teacher at East High School.
Working with a lot of the tools that many of them have never used before, that's a valuable thing, that, and a lot of them are learning skills that they will use in their own household as well. Some of them are learning about how solar energy works and solar panels work. But overall, I think the idea of building something that then is donated to not just a first year in Anchorage, but then the world at large over to Sudan is probably the solid take-home message that they're going to get.
The students had to build complex electronic systems, troubleshoot problems, and become skilled at splicing and wrapping wires. But knowing what they were making would go to help others in need was the biggest motivation of all. Udayan Dutta is 16 years old.
I was not originally from this country. I came from India. I've seen children in other countries when they see like machines that are interesting to them. It's like opportunities that they haven't seen before. So they just like automatically go to it, and they're like, oh, what does this do?
I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Give a young person you know a boost by recognizing the good things they're doing. Nominate at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Alaska State Division of Behavioral Health.
The Juno Symphony presents Dr. Noise Goes Bananas. Award-winning kids musician Dr. Noise joins the Juno Symphony for a special family concert Friday, January 20th at 6 p.m. at the JDHS Auditorium. You won't want to miss this zany introduction to the world of the symphony hosted by Dr. Noise and Maestro Pickett. Sponsored by ExxonMobil, admission to this concert is pay as you can. Check out junosymphony.org for more information.
Yes, we shall all miss Etta James. Well, tomorrow on Juno Afternoon, Jeff will be talking about the first part. Well, actually, we'll be presenting the first part of seven of a series of specials highlighting the history of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. These are produced by Nellie Moore and 360 North. We'll also be getting a preview of tomorrow night's presentation of the Mudrooms event. And we'll have Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more. That'll all be tomorrow at 3 o'clock, as usual, on Juno Afternoon, when Jeff will be back.